This is the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. On this show, Chris Sampson and I were joined by Danny Bisland and Paul McNeil. Both Danny and Paul work at the Scottish FA, dealing with clubs on a daily basis. This podcast started off with a title of making the most of your local community, but that title would not do this podcast justice. Danny and Paul gave us an insight into some of the amazing work being done by clubs in their local communities all over the country. There are plenty of lessons from some of the excellent grassroots teams that league clubs can learn from. Danny and Paul are very passionate about their work, and if you don't come away from this podcast inspired about what football can do and the role that your club can play in doing that, then you may be in the wrong role. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to show 15 of the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast with myself, Chris Sampson from Sports Marketing Scotland, and Michael Bokel from the Scottish FA.
Hello.
Today we're talking about quite an important topic, I think, and one that will be important to a lot of clubs across a lot of levels of Scottish football, and that is how to get more involved in your local community. Michael, just give us a wee brief intro.
Yeah, so I think we've talked a lot across different podcasts, whether it was with Mark Bradley talking about fan experience and what can be done in the community, to how you get your local community more involved and how you actually market to them as well. So we've got a couple of my colleagues at the Scottish FA who, if we can keep within an hour, we'll hopefully come up with some good stuff.
We do. Let's introduce them. Danny, welcome to the podcast. Club grow manager, national club grow manager at the Scottish FA. I'll add that first bit in. And Paul McNeil, head of community development.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Great. Well, we just get kicked off then. Can you briefly tell us a bit about each of your roles and your background?
My role at the Scottish FA is to head up all of our community-based programmes and manage our six regions that we have across the country, which allows us then to stretch out to those communities via a lot of different projects and allows us to try and work with as many of the communities, but and probably more inspire and help support club development in our communities. So at the essence, we want to get more people involved in the game, ensure they stay in the game, but also help and support volunteers who do an incredible amount of work. So that's kind of the background of kind of my role within it.
And from my perspective, my role mainly is to work with the community clubs and the community organisations which exist across the country. We've got about 2,500 clubs in Scotland, which is a huge amount, and we work with the regional staff and the regional teams to try and empower as many organisations as we possibly can so that they can work with our communities.
And what does getting football clubs involved in the community mean to you?
Well, I think for us that it's probably the lifeblood of our sport. I think we see so many of people who their club means so much to them, and that's across the board. It probably doesn't matter if you're involved in a grassroots club to probably one of the largest clubs in this country, that it just means something. It's either a generational thing, you've went there with your mum and dad, you'll be there, you'll remember the first time. I think in social media we see so many times people now put messages of the first time a child went to the stadium, and it's that big smile, it's that really important bit. But we all have a story to tell about how that impacts onto us. So no matter what part of the community you're in, something will have happened at your club that will be a memory that will stay with you for the rest of your life. So even a few back years ago when Hibs won the Scottish Cup for the first time in 100 years, it means so much to a generation. Regardless of that, it will mean somebody that Auchinleck, for example, putting out air. That will live in memories of people for so much more. But for us, we really encourage our clubs not just to think about football as just the game that happens on a Saturday. It's got such a bigger, wider impact to go and make a difference to people's lives, change lives, help with so many other things that are in society today. So for us, it's really, really important that we encourage our clubs to stretch out into those communities, to make a difference, to use the brand that they've really got. And when you talk about the brand, it doesn't matter what level the club it is. That strip means something to somebody. It means something really, really important to them. So for us, we really want to make sure that clubs understand that. And I think they are now starting to understand that it's not sometimes just a supporter base, but that wider community environment they have so much impact onto.
And the badge, I don't think we can underestimate the power of the badges. Paul has talked about that, and your experiences might be as a fan, you might, again, went through the turnstile to go and watch a game, but you might be to participate within a club as well. And I think crucially, and we'll talk about this later on, that clubs are opening up their doors to more and more parts of the local community. So I think traditionally you used to go along into a stadium and it was only 3 p.m. on a Saturday. There's now initiatives and events taking place Monday to Sunday, you know, from morn, noon and night. And I think crucially as well, from grassroots, for community clubs, they're opening up their doors to as many different people as they possibly can. They're talking about people as opposed to players. And I think that's a really, really unique thing about Scotland and a really, really crucial thing as well going forward.
You both mentioned it kind of already, but what's the current landscape of Scottish football when it comes to clubs being involved in the communities?
Huge. I think we've now seen that they've always been. If you think, I don't think it's going to change. I think we've become more professional at it at all levels. So you probably go back to, if you go back probably for me, which is 30 plus years ago, you would probably get the local goalkeeper turning up at your fete and beat the goalie, and that was your club's input in the community, or a couple of free tickets. But that means something to somebody. So they've always done those things. I think clubs are much smarter. So rather than just, and I don't think clubs, I think as Danny alludes to, they talk about people. So it's not acceptable really just to rock up to a local primary school, there's 10 tickets for a game. People will just go, well, okay, and what? So it's much more about them impacting into what other things happen. So whether or not they're doing schools-based programmes or whether they're doing community environments, everybody has so much they can go and do in society nowadays. So when we see clubs, we have like some of our really good clubs that do a lot of good work. So you have the Mortons, the Aberdeens of the world, the Celtic, the Rangers of the world, doing things. And it's really critical to communities because it makes that bit of a difference. So it's not just giving away a couple of free tickets. We see them now doing alternative education programmes, which is really good. We see them doing health and fitness programmes, which is really, really important. Alzheimer's programmes, I think that is something that's incredible when you think a football club, which has got so much steeped in history, allows people to come back in and remember that bit, which is such a crucial bit at the ages and stages of people's lives. So the landscape continues to change, and is I think what we're really delighted to see is clubs are upping their ante every time. They're looking at innovative ways in which they go, because they know that the fans of the future aren't interested in a couple of free tickets. They're interested in what does that club do for my wider community, and we see that kind of evolving and developing as we continually see it, which is really good, and it shows you that the clubs are thinking about, I think that Danny mentions there, that it's not about players, it's about people, and it's about communities, and they're really thinking about how they engage in that, which is incredible.
And I think crucially as well, we see less teams within Scotland, and what I mean by teams is those standalone organisations. Clubs are born out of that. No, there's we have now clubs, grassroots organisations who are 300, 500, up to 1,500 players. And they're huge organisations, massive, and they have such a big impact within the local community. And I think that's having an effect on all parts of the game as well. So the Lone League, for example, I went to a Scottish Cup game a few years ago, and one of the games was Spartans versus East Kilbride, and at half time, the players all running about on the pitch, half of them were wearing Real Madrid, Barcelona, Celtic and Rangers tops, but there was another half of the pitch that were all wearing East Kilbride and Spartans tops. Now, that's a phenomenal achievement from both those clubs. And it's a huge amount of work in the past 10, 15, 20 years that they're able to go and do that. And I think there's more and more clubs, all parts of the game, that are realising they're actually having an effect on the older person within the community, all the way down to that 3-year-old.
Yeah, I think that's the bit that as Danny says, I think it's that legacy bit of a club we are now seeing. We're seeing new involvement of new clubs. You mentioned East Kilbride or Spartans. You used to say 10 years ago, would somebody put a Spartan strip on at 6 years of age? Probably laughed. But now people are going, well, that's it. We've seen it a couple of times, Danny and myself, when we go along to Pollock games. So for example, the Pollock guys, after their games at their wee community pitch, they put them all on a bus and they ship them all up to the stadium. They're all in the kit. That means something to them. That really, really means something to these young guys. And they look up to these young Pollock junior players as their idols, and that's incredible, because they're so much in touch, literally in touching distance. And I think it just shows you how the difference that we can start to make from a large community club right into the big professional clubs that we have in this country.
There's obvious then benefits from that in terms of how they market to those sort of people in their community and make them lifelong supporters of the club, isn't there?
I think there's probably two bits that probably Danny and I go touch on is we probably have a uniqueness in the country where we have clubs that will have supporters bases, but we also have clubs that we want to have football for life. So part of our bigger overarching things, how do we get involved, people involved, and keep them in for life? So the two things are really there. The experience, if you're 6 years of age and you go along and you get a bad experience, you won't go back. It's simple. If you're playing it or you're supporting it, you won't go back. But if you fall in love with it, you will continually go back. And I think we see that with a lot of our grassroots clubs, of how they realise that first engagement is so important to keep them in there. And we see it all the time with clubs. We'll see them. I think some of the things that I really admire is when you, for example, we see sometimes in the Great Scottish Run, we see clubs all turning up, all in their kit, all so proud to be representing them, but doing fundraising, maybe for something else, maybe for a charity, maybe for something else. And for our clubs, I think we're starting to see that more acceptable thing within family stands and things about how that can be really, really important. That first bit there, but it's not just the free ticket, as I say, and turning up at 5 to 3 and that's you've done your job. It's much bigger than that.
And I think the crucial thing from our perspective is that clubs, no matter what level they are within the game, if they've got their own story to tell, that for me is how they market themselves effectively. You know, they can, if they can share their own story at that specific time to their own audience, to their local community, that's going to attract more people into the game. Now, again, from our perspective, from football development perspective, it might be to attract somebody to come and play the game, but it might be just to attract somebody to be a volunteer or helper or coach or someone else that's going to be involved. And I think clubs have got to be better and have been better at selling how big an impact they have within the local community. Bonnyrigg Rose, for example, one of the clubs that work with in terms of their community organisation, they talked about having an impact on about 2,500 people within that local community. Nobody else, no other organisation will come even close to what their impact is. Now, from a marketing perspective, how they sell themselves and how they sell that story is really, really crucial about attracting additional investors, or just people to come in and be part of what that organisation actually means.
And I think it's the look and the brand and the feel of clubs. I think that's the bit that some clubs, probably 30 years ago, were doing that. They all played in the same colour and so on and so forth. But we've really seen every club now that from no matter what age, they all play in the same colour of strips, they all play in the same marketing, they all have the same look and feel, and it's pretty incredible. But for a person, that means you've got an identity towards that. You really feel part of a bigger picture. So if young children are going to school, then they can identify with somebody else within their school environment, which is really good. And I think Daniel was there when he was mentioning about young people having Real Madrid or Barcelona talks. We certainly are seeing more community clubs being really proud of their own stuff. I see clubs now selling their own scarves, hats, merchandise. Now, if you'd asked me 30 years ago, a grassroots club having an online shop, I'd have thought, are you mad? But I see a lot of clubs now, at Christmas time, that's what they're pushing. And parents are really happy to buy that, because it means something to that child. It means something. And it's incredible. And I think we see a range of that now happening that allows the clubs to position themselves in such a unique space within their community. That I would probably argue that we are now seeing the football clubs of the world overtaking the uniform groups that used to own that space. So if you think about the Scouts, the Boys Brigade and everything else, they had a uniform, they had a really good environment they would live in. I would argue now that because of the nature of the sport, football clubs are certainly taking over that space, because people want to be involved in it, they want to look and feel the same as their friends and everything else, and it really does mean something to them.
Yeah, because we saw a wee upsurge towards Christmas time last year, and there was about four or five different grassroots clubs who had decided to do panini sticker books, essentially. So they went to a supplier to create these Panini sticker books, and Bonnaroo Grows again were one of those clubs that talked about it, and they were a bit not reluctant, but they didn't know quite how it was going to go. They said they sold about 10,000 stickers. You know, there was kids bringing their stickers into the local primary school and the secondary school, doing swapsies, you know, like making sure that they got the 2000 age group. You know, me Timmy who plays within that team, because he's the one that was really, really difficult to get. And the girls section were doing exactly the same. Now, again, if you lift and lay that across the country and all that's happening week in, week out, then what an impact.
Yeah, and I think
football does a huge amount.
I couldn't agree more. I think when we see that in the social media aspect of it, they are really, really switched on to what, and I'm not talking at any level now, of the game. You see clubs so proud to identify and push out social media messages about what they are doing, and it's constant, and it really helps the local community. And what I think we find a lot of times that we engage with a lot of our clubs will be they understand that local business as well, and how that local business wants to engage. So you have a pollock that they know that if they engage with the local businesses, they'll all benefit from that wider. And you'll find that the person at the club is the parent of somebody who owns the local. It just becomes quite an incredible environment that we've managed to create. And it's just been a joy to watch that. It's been a joy to watch that over a decade, about how they've changed from probably, as Danny and I would have described it, maybe the best part of 15 odd years ago, where a team would have finished at the end of the season, they'd have went like the bag of balls, they'd have threw them in the garage and went, right, okay, we'll see you in August. That doesn't exist anymore. It doesn't exist. They're very professional, and that's at every level of the game, I would say, is now really good at doing that.
If a club wanted to start doing more in the community, kind of rewinding it a little bit, how should they begin?
Asking them. You know, that this is the big thing that we're now getting to. A lot of the football clubs now, I think, in the past, naturally assumed what the local community wanted and needed. And we're now seeing more and more of them, and this goes again the full range of the game, so from SPFL level down to grassroots. They're turning around to the community and going, what do you want to do? What do you need us to do? How can we help out? You know, and it goes from the clubs are delivering fit fans, for example, for people who are overweight that want to potentially then lose a bit of weight and be involved within a club. It goes to those people within the local care home, for example. Morton do this phenomenal programme where they send coaches in to go and speak to local residents, just to make them feel part of the local community. That only happened because they actually asked them what they would potentially want them to try and do. It goes to grassroots clubs saying, right, well, we're thinking about starting a girls section. Okay. And then they've got a huge amount of buy-in, and they go from 50 to 100 players, you know, like a St Peter's within Paisley, because they asked that question. And I think in the past, we always shied away from that. Football community, football knows what's best. But in actual fact, if you go and ask those people, those parents, those people who are involved, they're going to give that answer. And I think that's a crucial first step.
And I think we see a lot more, as Danny says, about people understanding the sport better. Football is by far the biggest sport in our country. It outstrips everything that we have by a mile, by an absolute mile. We don't have anything else that comes near it. You look at the newspapers, you look at the radio shows and everything else, it's huge. And I think what we do hear a lot of criticism about the ills of Scottish football. However, every week there is something positive happening. We just don't broadcast it well enough. And I think that's what the clubs are doing really well. So you're starting to hear people going, right, we have an issue in society. How will that be resolved? So it's Danny says, we're starting to see. I'm speaking to the Barhead guys, I think it's a really good example. They do some Friday night football now, free of charge at their own pitch, and it was born out of some of the coaches, some of the parents, and some of the players all saying, there's nothing to do on a Friday night. And the players actually saying, we get ourselves into a bit of bother on a Friday night, going to help us out. So from some players then say, right, we'll open up the pitch, we'll put a couple of coaches at the side just to make sure everything's alright, come down and kick a ball. So there's a group of people looking at how best that club can support their community, and that is born out of them all speaking about things. And we see some health programmes now, we see other things, and I think people are now going, right, wait a minute, you've got the masses of people here, how do we engage with you, how do we help you, how do we do these things? And Danny's right, it is a listening game. It's not a Saturday sport. Yeah. It's far from that. It is such an important part and an integral part of society now, that the clubs are winding themselves so, so tight into. And I think that, that really makes us proud, but also really, I think we've still got a massive job of how we celebrate that, how we push that out, and how people can go, ah, but that's just boys kicking the ball. No, it's not. That's archaic. It's about an inclusive sport for everybody, and we've still got a big job to do that. But I'm very proud that the clubs have taken that kind of vehicle forward as best as they can.
What support is available, whether from the Scottish FA or out with, that can help clubs do more in the area, especially as Chris says, if they're looking to begin and they're not too sure? Danny, you said about asking, but from a Scottish FA level, yeah, but and beyond?
We have our regional infrastructure, so we have club development managers, girls and women's officers, our regional our football development officers all across the country. And I think Danny alludes to that there, that the support is how do we build the best frameworks for them now. I think probably when we started, probably the best part of 10, 12, 15 years ago, we probably were trying to do things for the clubs. We're now putting in the infrastructure to allow them to do things. So our job is really, the support structure we've got there is the frameworks that we can then allow them to go and work with, the support and the expertise that we can do that are opening the doors for them as well, which is so critically important, because sometimes you've got to support those hard-working volunteers or any of the clubs that are out there to understand who else we need to go and speak to. I think in this country, and it's always where a journey we've kind of went on, is most of the European countries would probably just kind of snigger at us when they say, who's the first point of contact? We always say the sports minister, and it's a junior portfolio in this country, and they say, yeah, but you do sport, why is that your point of contact? Because they all deal with the education ministers and so on and so forth, because it's different, it's looked upon different. And I think that's the journey that we've all went on. We are now starting to help clubs go into a space, as Danny says, because they're asking the question, so we're able to say, well, have you thought about money from the health board? Have we looked at infrastructure? Have we looked about how you market your club better? As Danny quite rightly says, some of these groups are 500 to 1,000 members. That's community groups. Some of our senior clubs are huge. How do you tap into that resource? That resource you've got there, and how do we do that? So Danny, of course, does a great bit of work with our Teamworks programme that allows us to put kind of people from blue chip companies into there, and that's changed some of the clubs dramatically, because you have somebody in there that goes, well, I know about accountancy, so I'll help you. So you get the wee volunteer who's went, phew, thank goodness for that, because I feel low grade maths. So, and it's about helping and supporting the volunteers of the future or the clubs to make sure that they're in the proper way, and guidance is the best thing through our regional infrastructure, I would say.
That was a short, sharp answer there from Paul.
As ever.
Old grade. Sure,
old grade, I know. Who else has old grade?
You know, I would also say, crucially, that other clubs, you know, as you well know from doing this podcast, that people are so willing to give up their time and share their experiences. And I think that's a big shift now going forward, that there's so many clubs now who have walked the walk, made mistakes, and they'll go, I would stay away from maybe doing that next time, or here's a route that I would definitely go down. And if they can do that in conjunction with the staff, that's huge. We were up at a recent event in Aberdeen, and they were talking about how they have an impact because they directly invest into people within the Inverurie area, so the Geary Sports Project. And What they do up there is they actually put time and effort and money into a local area to that having a benefit out with Aberdeen. Now, if they ever need support, they go back into the senior club on that local doorstep and say, right, we're thinking about doing X, Y and Z. What's your view? Because that club have grown hugely in terms of their community trust in the last 5 or 10 years. So they've made mistakes, but crucially, they've also had a lot of success. So they can then go back and inform the clubs. And through our regional network now, we've got so many different examples of clubs who are doing some incredible work. Yeah. So I think if there's anybody listening that doesn't know where to go to next, that through the Scottish FA staff and through the local clubs, we can definitely offer some advice going forward.
I was just going to ask, obviously already a lot of the senior and junior clubs and clubs playing in the low and high leagues have link-ups with a lot of grassroots clubs already. Would you say that's something that needs to happen, or can grassroots clubs kind of continue in this space on their own in the community?
But both, I think it's depending on the community, if I'm being perfectly honest. That some clubs will rely on one another in a local area, because particularly in the Central Belt, there's so many different clubs within each, within a locale. If you then go into a local community club and it is literally the one team town, then all of a sudden everybody naturally congregates to that one area. But you know, we've seen clubs like St Mirren, for example, try to do more outreach work, whether they're bringing four or five grassroots organisations and clubs in and onto the doorstep to then do that little bit of work. You'll be aware of the work the Hearts are doing, for example, where they're doing the street play and their street game, sorry, and they're going out into the local community to then try and get more players interested into the Hearts brand, but also they're having an impact then within that local area. For me, that's probably the future direction of a lot of the clubs. Now, from the back, from a marketing perspective, if you're able to then go back to say, right, not only are we going to have a benefit on the number of fans that are walking in through the door, the number of people who are consuming our brand, but we're also now talking about 2,500, 3,000, 5,000 people locally who are now speaking positively about what we're doing, that's a really powerful model, incredibly powerful. And again, I don't think we can underestimate that in terms of where we're trying to get to.
And I think a lot of the barriers have come down. Danny makes a real good point in terms of that support. Bringing clubs together and allowing them to speak has really made a difference to some of the clubs, because I think over the years everybody was bitter rivals, and you go, ah, we're not speaking to them. But we now see that bit where somebody will go, how did you get that pitch? And they'll tell them the story, and they're very happy to share a lot of that information. And you start to see that kind of cross-fertilisation of clubs going, right, so you did that, that sounds really easy. Yeah, it was, because we moved on that journey. I think the other thing as well is we are now seeing people kind of leaving a lot of the baggage at the door, because they realise to improve and to be better in their community, people won't. Sponsorship, for example, for a lot of clubs is tough, right? So the traditional way would have been for the local shop or probably the local pub. Their marketing areas are not there anymore. They don't exist as robust as they used to be. So it probably isn't acceptable to walk up to the local shop or the local pub and say, oh, it's me again, it's the start of the season, going to give me £500, please. Because they'll go, no, I've not seen you for a year. But the clubs are really now getting a bit more about what they can do in that space and how they can utilise their brand. And I'm talking about any club now, at any level. But that means they need to speak to each other, or they need to speak to the community. And Danny's absolutely right when he says more communities are speaking. So you find out there might be four clubs of different scale in a local community, but a lot of them are saying, right, okay, let's get together. How do we do it? How do we merge? How do we take this forward? Because crucially, what they then say is that is the best thing for the community in the area, because it allows us then to do more. And I think that is what we're starting to see in really good grassroots leaders, but also from our clubs, we can see that they're starting to look at those ideas. And some of our clubs have been really good for that, and the Mortons of this world are quite open and going, well, these are the things we've done to improve, please use these ideas as freely as you want. And I think that's been a great journey, but it's allowed our clubs to be different. The volunteers are different, aren't they, now from 10 years ago?
They are, and that probably goes back to the Teamworks programme. So that's a programme that we very fortunately started off with Deloitte and Grant Thornton. We had Aberdeen Standard Life, and now through yourself, you know, Skyscanner have now been a part of that programme. But I think crucially what that's allowed these organisations to do is have an influence directly into community organisations, because it's somebody who's got a real specific skill set in accountancy, marketing, communication, whatever that is, and then get into working with these clubs, because this is the bit that we're working really hard at, that it's now becoming more and more difficult to run these clubs and keep them sustainable and keep them going from year in, year out. And again, that's from the whole game, top to bottom. So if there's anybody listening, for example, who's working with an organisation who thinks, you know what, it would be really, really good for me or for my company to be involved in that, then we would absolutely be delighted to kind of follow up those conversations, because I can guarantee absolutely there is going to be a club within your local community that will benefit from it, absolutely.
And I think the reverse of that, companies and people see what's actually happening, which is so crucial, isn't it? I think people have a perception, a football club, that'll be a lot of boys running about playing football. And when they turn up, they go, wait a minute, how much stuff do you use doing? And that then allows people to go back and tell that message. So the best we can sell our product is through people, is about that positive influence. So we see so many people going, No, and I hear it a lot of times when you're at things, people go, wait a minute, I'm going to stop you. That's not Scottish football. That might be a microcosm up there, but right down here is people doing a lot of good stuff in their community, whether that be a senior professional football club or a grassroots club. They're doing a lot of good stuff, and people are now starting to hear that because we deliver it, we communicate it, we market it in a much better way than previously. People would have just shut the doors and would have went, ah, no, really interested in that. But I think that's been such a journey, and it's something that clubs should be very proud of with the journey they've went on.
There's a lot that clubs probably already have to hand that is available to help get them more engaged with the community if they're not doing as much already. I mean, for example, a club's ground could be an asset to a community, or they could do more. Have you got any examples of clubs that maybe open up their ground to the local community or utilise it in a different way?
Yeah, no. When every time I give examples, I always feel apologetic to the ones that I missed out. But there's ones like Lynx Park, Montrose FC. They do this incredible programme where they interact with the local primary schools, and they bring the local children in to do maths around the pitch, you know, like measuring how big the pitch is. They do mini press conferences, for example, to try and get people's self-confidence and esteem up. They bring them into changing rooms and they do alternative education within those grounds. Now, again, reverse that 15, 20 years ago, that was unheard of, but they now see the ground as a real asset for them to then go and do that. You've got clubs like St Rocks in East End of Glasgow, who traditionally have always been a community orientated club, but they now tackle holiday hunger, for example, in the ground during the week. They invite people down, they let the pitch open, they've redeveloped the facility itself, the changing rooms, the areas that they can then use, and they bring local school children down and they try and bust them in, you know, and they all do this free of charge or with local sponsors and people then helping out. There are swathes of senior clubs who are doing that at the moment. They open up their doors at Christmas time, for example, for older people to come in and experience a you know, their Christmas meals.
And I think the uniqueness of a football stadium is a bit, where would you rather do something? Would you rather do it in the local community centre or at a football stadium? And people will probably go, can I go to a football stadium because I might see the pitch. And I know that might sound really ridiculous, but it has something, and I think our clubs are starting to understand that more and more. It's not that maybe the football pitch is the bit, it's the uniqueness of being able to go into that area and using the assets that are round about it to see that. And a number of them will use, I think I'll go back to probably that, the Football Memories programme, because it's so crucial that people probably went to those stadiums or they can see it, that's an environment. And you've also got to remember that football has got such a tradition in this country. It's probably that most unique sport that if you have somewhere where people have went to, have walked to, you'll remember things about it. So when you run an event there, it's got the uniqueness, and people will say that, oh, it's happened at the local club. And you'll go, oh, is it really that big deal? And I think I try my best to take myself out of that and look at it from the outside, because sometimes when you're in football, you get a bit fickle because you go to a lot of stadiums and you think, but every day I get to walk up the stairs at Hampden and in the front door. Now, for a lot of people who come here, they are so excited. So when you meet them and we go into a box, the first thing they ever do is go, can I go outside and look at the pitch? And you think, aye, no bother. When are we going to start the meeting in fact? But just that trigger, just that bit, and I think a lot of our clubs are really now getting really good at using their community asset to their max and looking at ways in which they can do more in that.
There's that point that sometimes gets made, it's like nobody has their ashes scattered down the aisles in Tesco. people get married in their local stadiums now, everything happens there.
Thinking of it really... examples of clubs that are thinking outside the box. So Falkirk, for example, Falkirk FC and their community foundation, what they did is they've actually developed one of the stands behind the goal, and it's now a social enterprise. It's essentially a charitable organisation where people can hire out that space, but they have the fans before the game on a Saturday or the Sunday. You know, that's a social space for them, but during the week it's beside a gym, it's a community gym, so people then come in and use that, and then they hire that out as well. So I think clubs are now thinking outside the box about other avenues, because ultimately clubs have got to succeed in terms of a business. That's the bottom line. We want them to succeed. We want them to be there for a long time. But if they can benefit the local community and their business as well, that social enterprise model is the one for me that's absolutely critical going forward.
There's plenty of other opportunities to get the local community involved in, like, things like match days as well, isn't there? Halftime entertainment, for example.
Yeah, and I think the clubs are really using these opportunities to the best of their capabilities as well. I think we do a lot of it. I know when we do a number of our youth internationals, we do a bit of halftime activity, and that can change a child's life. So when you get that opportunity, the mascots opportunities or anything, that is good. So they're the key ones. They're the key ones. You can do them. But there's a lot of other things that you're starting to see clubs do to do that bit of interaction before, during and probably after the game. And you see that from any level. And I really mean that from any level. So a number of times you'll maybe go and watch some junior games, or junior football games, you will see them at halftime. They'll let the kids on the pitch at halftime. And that makes a world to a child, because of course they've stood. If you're 8 years of age and you're standing, staring at that green pitch for 45 minutes, you just want to own it. Now just giving them 5 minutes makes them feel good about themselves. They get back in and they go, that was great, wasn't I, going on the pitch, I scored a goal. That's just dream factor. But I think clubs are getting really, really how they interact with their fans, and I see it for my sons. I'm a season ticket holder at St Mirren, but I see them starting to try and do a lot more things with the mascots and things at half time. And the one that they do is they all get to buy a ball, and the mascot stands there and they try and throw it, which is great. I mean, they're trying to scud the mascot, but it's whoever gets closest wins the prize. But that is so better than a raffle ticket, because one, at half time, everybody gets to go down, everybody gets to go and do something that's a wee bit fun, and they have a bit of interaction with them. And I think that is something that's really good, and we see that across there. So I think they're using more ways in which they can look at the sport to the best of their capabilities.
I think the girls and women's game are brilliant at that. In particular, you know, you go to a women's A squad game and you've got all of those role models and superheroes, you know, doing autographs after the game, and I don't think you can underestimate the power that has in them, with on any of the girls, in fact any of the fans are in the stand, they go down and get Kim Little's autograph and they get to chat to her after the game just to say thanks very much. Now again, the microcosm of that is a local women's Premier League game, the players still come off the pitch and speak to the fans around the side. And you've got 13, 15, 17-year-old girls, 9-year-olds, all there who want to just be part of that experience. And again, I think for me, going forward, that, you know, if that can be replicated more and more by community organisations, that, you know, if they're a role model and you can touch them and you can see them, I think that has such a massive impact. So going forward, I'd like to see more and more clubs kind of use that as a model.
Yeah, I think we've seen that throughout the years about player engagement or fan engagement coming. I always talk about Robert Snodgrass coming back to his local primary school, St Anne's in Glasgow, and it was absolutely hysterical. We had the full assembly hall ready for him. He was stuck in traffic, so he was 15-20 minutes late. The assembly went on singing. Still singing their songs for the 15-20 minutes. The head teacher's going, "We're running out of songs. When's he going to get here?" And it shows you the impact. Robert turned up, we could see him at the back, we were thinking, thank goodness he's here now, let's get him in the front. And just as I turned round, I went, he's disappeared. Where did he go? And he went, because he knew the local cleaner. The local cleaner was his mum's pal. So off he went for a conversation. And he comes up, and you're like, come here, wait. So eventually he comes up, and he's high-fiving everybody. And he gets to the front, and of course, the head teacher's going, and he went, Charlie, how you doing? He knew the wee boy who was in P2 because it was one of his cousin's friend's pal. But I was going, but you didn't. That just showed you the total power of the sport in a very small microcosm. And Danny's absolutely right. I think we're still seeing clubs realising at any scale how important they are seen. So even at a grassroots club, if they have a junior team or they have a team in the Lowlands League, it doesn't matter. That person up there is somebody that a five-year-old can still inspire to and still do, and we've got to use those great opportunities that we have to change lives, because this is what you do. You do change lives with meeting these women. I think Danny's right about the girls and women's bit. It's such a buzz. I mean, regardless of the result, it's a buzz. I mean, a few of the games we go to, after it doesn't calm down, isn't it? You know they're going to come over. Somebody's calm, and they come over, and it just makes a difference. And I think that's such a good thing.
There's been a couple of studies. I know we've done a study with UEFA around social return on investment. I know Celtic had done a study recently of what they contributed to the Glasgow economy. Danny, can you take us through the social return on investment study that was conducted in partnership with UEFA?
So, trying not to make this as dry as I possibly can. But I think, the social return on investment piece was created by UEFA. So UEFA have a programme called GROW, which essentially is a programme they're trying to develop with all national associations across Europe to do this thing called Federations of the Future. So they want to try and future-proof where federations are getting to, national associations are getting to. And then I think from our perspective, we're now trying to use that model then to go back into our clubs and everybody else within Scottish football. But about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, they had let us know that they were creating a social return on investment piece, and it was basically getting designed by a company down south called Substance, and they were interacting with a huge amount of academic research and people from academia about trying to make this really robust model. And see, you're all starting to glaze over, but I promise it's going to get interesting. But I think crucially what it did do was it gave them a model they were able to lift and lay. So they went to Sweden and Romania just to try and test it out. And by hook or by crook, we managed to kind of nominate ourselves as the first country in Europe that they were actually going to roll this out to, and absolutely delighted to say that they did. I think crucially what it gave us was an idea of value of football. You know, Paul had mentioned earlier on about how important it is to Scotland and Scottish society. We've never been able to actually articulate what that is in terms of pounds, shillings and pence. That's for you, Paul. And I think that the figures involved, and we can talk a little bit about them, are just astronomical and really, really difficult, I think, for people to get their head around because they are so big.
What were some of, like, the headline? We don't have to go on because the report the report is available on the Scottish FA website, and we'll put a link in the show links for the podcast. But what were the headlines?
So the model was created for our registered players. So UEFA are really, really keen on getting a better view in terms of the data about who actually consumes a game on a more regular basis. So we took that model and we said we'd really like to extend it to everybody. So there's about 140,000 registered players, but we reckon there's about 680,000 players who are five-a-sides, you know, or recreational. They participate once a week or once a month. Now, the figures for the total worth to Scotland was something in the region of £1.1 billion annually, and that's just football participation. And that's broken down into economic contribution, to health, preventive spend, worth to communities, to individuals, a little bit around football performance as well. So, the most challenging thing is actually saying that number out to people, because they just go, all right, okay, 1.1 billion, but you know, it's like 1/10 of the whiskey industry, or 1/5 of the whiskey industry, 1/10 of our tourism annually. Now, and that's just on football, that's just people participating in the game. That's not even talking about, because Celtic, you talked about their report, they looked at what their impact was within the local area within Glasgow, but also football tourism and people coming in. If clubs are looking to try and do something similar, if they can match up what they have in terms of attendances and people coming into the ground alongside their football participation programme, the figure's astronomical, huge. And it's our job to kind of shout as loudly as we possibly can about it.
It would help get more resource behind it as well, doesn't it, in terms of like sheer numbers of not even just volunteers, but potentially, because it's got such a value behind it, full-time members of staff, it can come in and make an even bigger difference.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it looked at staffing infrastructure, it looked at people who are employed through facilities being developed, it looked at what people spend on taking their children to games, to participate in the game. So the more information that we get in now, what we've realised is that when we go back to government and others, we say, listen, this is our value. I think if it's a unified voice collectively across Scotland, and maybe that's been a wee bit too romantic, but if collectively we all start speaking in this same way, it's so, so powerful. And that's from a national level. But again, if I look at a local level, and if you know, Cove Rangers wanted to do the same, we had an Aberdeen model, and I looked at what the Aberdeen Community Trust and all those other grassroots clubs within those areas contributed. It's still in the region of about £70 million. You know, it's absolutely huge.
Yeah, and I think that's the bit about professionalising it. We've always known that football has got such a big footprint in this country. We know that, but this was allowing us then to have the ability to say, here it is, and Danny's right, the number is staggering, it's like Monopoly money. But for us, for once in our life, we're able to say, football makes a difference. And if we present it in the correct manner, either through the right marketing channels or the right social channels, we can really make a difference to not only to society, but how we look at it. If you invest into Scottish football, you will make a difference to people's lives or to communities or to anything like that. And I think that's such a strong message. So for us, when we use that, and I think Danny's done an incredible job with that, to push it. But I think for us then to be able to go into a local community, regardless if that's a senior club or not, and for them to go, this is the impact you can make. This is the impact you can make in your local community if you support each other. For local businesses, for international businesses, for anything, a lot of that's their employees. So that's sometimes now what companies are saying, I mean, that's all your football coaches, that's all the people that volunteer at our club. If we help them, they will feel better about society. We'll make a whole bit more rounded better. Having been involved in a number of grassroots clubs, the amount of people that want to support you are incredible, just so they can be associated with you. With the badge, yeah. And I think that is something that we should be proud of, but we need to push it. We really need to celebrate it a lot better. And that's the bit that I think, I think Danny and I debate this a lot. I think we've been a very shy and a humble about, let's not shout about football because other sports are there. No, I think we need to be more aggressive in how we speak about it, because we have so many good volunteers out there. We have so many good clubs. We have so many good projects that people should know that they're very good, because we should invest more and we should do more. And if you're, the money that comes in, Danny knows so many of the good clubs we've got out there, they look after that pound note very, very well, and they make that stretch to do the best that they possibly can. And I think that is so, so good to see.
You know, the investment they put in is like, it's 1 in 10. You know, you put a pound in, you get £10 back. But, you know, I've always said to anybody, and there might be people listening to this, who look at a social return on investment model, and they'll say, well, there's a bit of scepticism behind that. Fine, take 25% off that. Take 20% off that. Instead of at 1.1 billion, it's just 1 billion. You know, it's an incredible amount. You know, now, I think crucially, as Paul's saying, we've not really, I don't think, promoted the game within Scotland particularly well. UEFA picked us for a reason, because we have some incredible clubs doing some incredible work. We've got a brilliant football infrastructure within the country. We've got, 1.8 million people consider themselves fans within football?
Yeah, 1.4, yeah.
Sorry, 1.4.
I just got to be far too sorry.
Now, again, what an incredible amount of people that consider themselves fans now, and that's across just about every single community within Scotland. So we've now got to shout a little bit louder, I think, to people who potentially want to invest into our game, to say, invest into us, we'll make the pound stretch, but crucially, the clubs will deliver on some incredible work. Yeah. So why not be part of that?
Yeah, it's the impact. The impact is crucial. You were saying that clubs have got infrastructure that they can use, or people can go on that pitch at half-time. But every day of the week, I mean, as we sit here tonight, there'll be hundreds of activity happening out there. Hundreds of it, for all ages and stages, at all of our clubs in this country, that somebody will be doing something. And if we look at that from Danny's social return on investment, if we look at that from the National Performance Framework for Scotland, which is what the government underpins everything on, we probably hit most of the things. Do we hit stuff in health? You're absolutely right, we do. Do we hit stuff in education? Yeah. Do we hit something in the justice portfolio? Yeah, we do. We keep kids off the street, we make sure that they're safe, we make sure the environments are better. So for us, we're starting to speak a different language, and that's tough, because I think when Danny and I go out and we speak to some people, you're speaking about social return on investment, you're speaking about marketing policies, you're speaking about infrastructure planning. I think even when we go back 10 years ago and we say to football clubs, have you got a plan when you get home tonight? I mean, and it was like, it was, you know, do you have a 3-year plan? No, we don't even have a 3-month one. So I think now crucially we see that, and it's underpinned by their financial inputs, how they do that, what their turnover is, but more importantly, they make a difference. So when all of that's done correctly, the difference becomes bigger and bigger and bigger.
I think if I put my business head onto that, and what you guys have saying and about selling that story is there's different ways, and you mentioned about additional investment, whether it's sponsorship or local businesses, is there's different ways to sell your club into these people and convince them, and going on about the greater good of what football does, the greater good of what those clubs do, and each team that does within the community. So a bit of advice maybe, or take it as it is, but that when you are looking at approaching sponsors or somebody different to get investment in the club, is don't just think about what's happening on that pitch and the fans are going to the stadium on a daily basis, a weekly basis, but what that impact on that community is and how you sell that story. And as you said, Danny, at the start of the podcast, every club's got a story to tell. It's just how they pitch it and how they get that message across.
And when they're looking at that, when they're looking at that much, you know, the social return on investment piece, it's a huge amount of information that's in that, but they don't have to talk about everything. They just have to tailor a story to talk about that economic impact, because that may be where they want to try and go, all the social aspect, all the people. And it's a heart and minds idea. You know, for the first time we've actually got minds, we've got people who are able to go and articulate a value to football, but we need to do the video bit as well, or the social media part, and try and sell that story and talk about those individuals. And if any club are able to go and do that, and they're able to marry both of those up, hugely powerful, and I think it's really positive for football going forward.
Yeah, just finishes up there with a bit of, like, maybe one piece of advice then for clubs to take away.
Think big. If I'm being honest with you, I think big. The clubs who have all done that previously over the years, it's maybe taken them time to get to achieve their goals, but a hell of a lot of them have done that. Incremental, but think big.
Yeah. Have a plan. I think Danny and I know a club very well. We sat in with the chairman of Giffnock, who said probably about 10 years ago to us, I will never get this pitch done in my lifetime. And thank goodness the guy's still alive and we've got the pitch down. But they put a plan together. So I think planning, partnership, and dreaming very high, and do those things, and believe in what you're doing, but ask for a bit of help. Stretch out. The Scottish FA will always help. We have infrastructure. We can go and give a bit of expertise. But if you can do that, you can put it down, you can think where you want to get to, and not panic. And not panic about what you're going to do, because we will make a huge big of a difference.
And where can people reach out to get this help, and where can they find you both individually online?
Developing Community Clubs on the Scottish FA website is where most of the resources are held from the Scottish FA's perspective about support and advice. We've also got Quality Mark on there as well, in terms of a framework that we're able to then go and follow. There's some information about Teamworks there as well. Just get yourself onto the Scottish FA website, Michael. Definitely,
yes. Okay. Nice plug, thank you. And what about yourself individually, if they want to get your numbers up?
I need to get my numbers up, don't I? I'm Twitter, on social media. Danny Bisland, @DannyBisland, just get yourself on there, please. I would be delighted. Paul McNeil doesn't need any help with his brand out there.
Where can they find yourself, Paul?
I'm at Danny Bisland, @DannyBisland as well.
Great. That was great. I think there's a lot of lessons for clubs at all levels, especially SPFL, to learn from grassroots to learn from SPFL and everything in between. So, no, that was very good. And obviously, as Danny and Paul, you've said that there's a lot of resource on the Scottish FA website, and as an organisation, we are here to help. And we say that across everything, across these podcasts, that if there's anything that ever comes up in these podcasts, whether it's a specific marketing question, or you're looking pointed in the right direction, or you want hooked up or connected to another club that we think is doing some good stuff, yeah, we're more than happy to help.
So many different opportunities as well to get involved. So.
Yeah, just reach out to any of us.
Finish up?
Yeah, we'll finish up just with our usual feature on things that we've seen. As usual, we won't put the guests on the spot, but because you've given enough examples this one, to be fair. But yeah, Chris, is there anything you've seen in the last while that you wanted to flag?
Yeah, got a few. So MLS just kicked off at the weekend before we're recording this one. And I'm not sure if anybody's seen, but they have worked alongside Twitter to produce some club-specific like emojis when people put the kind of club-specific hashtags on Twitter. So again, just a nice little feature to add to some tweets from fans and then for the clubs to use as well.
I've spoke to Twitter on those sort of things specifically recently. And what they've been looking at that, and for any organisation or club, it's very much open to people that are investing in Twitter, because I was cheeky enough to ask for one, and fortunately we're doing a bit of work with Twitter in other areas where it's just helping us maybe look at exploring that. But yeah, it's with all these sort of things on social media, usually they're hoping you're spending a bit of money.
My final example is from Queen of the South. So they've just tweeted out at the weekend there, but when the pod's about to be released, they're going to be celebrating their 100th birthday, apparently. So they're celebrating with by encouraging fans to come along to their match against Falkirk in retro kits, which I quite like. I mean, just something different to kind of promote the match and get involved with the fans.
That's good. I've got a couple as well. First off, juniors, especially on the junior sort of FA and on Twitter, have been doing some increased activity. I think we mentioned them a few podcasts ago about they had been asking what people were looking for. We're starting to see things like featured match and their use of graphics, which is great. And I think from a league perspective, obviously trying to grow the sort of reputation and online awareness of the league, they're doing some good stuff there. And then one that I did not expect to see when I saw this come up on my Twitter timeline, but Jeanfield Swifts have a news skill on Amazon Alexa. And basically you can ask Alexa, if you add on the skill, that what the latest Jeanfield news is and their fixtures and results. So I mean, there's a club that, do they need to be on Alexa? On the grand scale of things, probably not, apart from a handful of people, but great to just seeing something and going, well, I'll tell you what, we're going to do that and we're going to push ahead. So yeah, no, fair play to them for doing something a bit different, and anybody with Alexa, go and give it a try.